proud to announce from Zurich, Men's League Switzerland, U.S. program, Austin Matthews.
To the Billy Box, Nylander gets an extra shift. William Nylander shoots, he scores! Coach played a hunch, and the kid has his first National Hockey League goal.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome to this week's edition of the Tip of the Tower Toronto Maple Leafs podcast. Joining me, as always, is David Morisuti and Jake Middleton. We will not talk about anything Super Bowl related or Mike Babcock's love for the Patriots, or respect. I won't say love, respect. I promise, Jake, so don't worry. We will talk about the Leafs, you know, the 3-1 victory tonight over the Dallas Stars. Guys, Curtis McElhinney looked pretty damn good. Is this something we should expect going forward, or is this just kind of, you know, playing some inspired hockey?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's like a kind of a mixture of both. From looking at his numbers at Columbus, he was always a pretty decent goalie who, when he plays in small amounts of playing time, whether it be like, you know, 15 or 20 games a season, I don't know how he would handle an expanded workload, but yeah, he looks pretty good, and I would have no issue with them giving Freddie a few more days off, considering how well McElhinney's been playing. He's in his past two starts, he's let up to three goals total. So,
no, I think, you know, your backup goalie, I know the Leafs plan is to use him on back to back nights, but I think if you're confident to play your backup goalie and give your starter a little bit more rest, why not? I mean, they play with St. Louis on Thursday. We know how it went the last time they played St. Louis. And they play Buffalo on Saturday. Like, I don't know if I would ride the hot hand for the next game, and then if McElhinney doesn't have a great game, then they go back to Anderson. That's what I would do, but I think Babcock will want to keep Anderson going, although he's not really going at all cylinders right now.
Well, he's been so bad recently. Since January, he's got, what, like a below .900 save percentage? I mean, he's just getting lit up since the All-Star break, too. Five goals or more in every single game. I know a lot of talk right now that people are saying is that he's tired. He's faced arguably the most shots in the league. I think he's top three. I'd have to go check that, but I know he's really high up there for most shots. So is he getting tired, or do you guys just think this is just a byproduct of how poor the defense is playing?
It's a mixture of both. I mean, he's made some really big-time saves. Like the one on Tavares yesterday was a really nice save, but he's getting let out to dry by his defenseman. I mean, O-Dog was talking about it today. There's, with some Leafs defensemen, they're either, you can't be both stupid or soft, and the Leafs have a couple guys that are stupid and soft. So, I mean, you can either be soft and smart or stupid and physical, and the Leafs don't, unfortunately, have a few more defensemen that don't have any of those endearing qualities at all.
It's a pretty good analogy there. Dave, do you think, like, the way Babcock coaches, you know, he's obviously uber competitive, and I could see him down the stretch maybe saying screw it at the Leafs are in the thick of the playoff race and playing Anderson on back-to-back nights. So do you think that he's just going to ride him out like you were saying earlier, or like, what are the chances that McElhinney is actually going to get some more starts?
I think, well, they brought in the Leafs have been big on the sports science, and I think they're really going to take into the fact of Anderson has never played more than 55 games in a year. Obviously, it'd be nice to see him get an expanded workload, but I don't want him playing 70 or starting 70 games and then go into the playoffs where it just gets even harder. I think it's best to keep the guys fresh, especially Anderson, who gets worked pretty hard. It's like, most of the games you watch him play, they're not easy starts for him. I don't think I've seen him have like an easy game where it's like he has a small workload. So I would be more in favor of giving him some rest when they can. I understand that right now they're everything is really close right now, especially in the Atlantic division. So you can make the case that they should try to ride him to make sure he's at his best when the playoffs come around. But at the same time, you don't want to burn him out to get to that stage. I don't think it makes any sense to do that. And McElhinney has shown that he can step in when you have him ready to make that start. You can't just throw him in randomly. If you get him, tell him this is going to be your game, I think he can be. I mean, he's a veteran. He's ready for it. He's been accustomed to that role for so many years. Just give him a chance to show that he can do it. You're not going to protect McElhinney. Like, there's no reason to. And there's no reason to protect Anderson either. But I think you'd be disservicing Anderson if you overplay him.
Well, how would you manage his workload then, Jake? Because I know a lot of people are going to keep bringing this up. You know, especially if he keeps struggling, they're going to say, hey, he's overworked. He's overworked. I mean, do you buy into that?
I mean, it's obviously I do because, you know, he's never played this many games in a season. I mean, how many games has he started this year? Probably around 45? I'm not really sure how many games they've played.
He started 43 games.
43 games. And I'm pretty sure his previous career high is like 54 or 55, something along those lines.
He started 53 2 years ago.
Okay, 53. Sorry, three years ago. He's catching up on that. And the season's nowhere near the end. I mean, this is also a incredibly compact schedule as comparison. The guy could say he's not tired, but you know he there's definitely some days where he just doesn't have it. I mean, obviously with the Stars game, he didn't have it. What was the game on the weekend? He didn't look very good against the Bruins.
Well, a lot of studies show, man, that goalies struggle on the second night of a back to back, right?
Yeah, and they just got to not play him on back to backs. I mean, they got to, in my opinion, they got to allocate 10 games or at minimum 7 games for McElhinney to play, because if you're going to be a playoff team, you just can't have him playing 70 games. You can't be doing what Edmonton's doing right now, yeah, where he's literally on pace to play. It's like 75 games.
Yeah, I can't tell, but well, because they don't have a backup they can trust in Edmonton right now. Like, yeah, he's on pace to start 73 games.
Jesus.
He's already done 49.
You look at down the stretch, I mean, in March and April alone, and you combine the 2 months, at least have 5 back-to-backs. So, and those are going to be key moments in the playoff race that likely will decide, you know, I mean, if a McElhinney loss here and then another McElhinney loss there, like, those, that's going to be 4 points they're missing out on, and that could be the difference in the playoff race. So I think Babs might just ride Anderson, considering how competitive he is. Like, do you guys feel that way too? I just feel like I just can't see Babs in a big moment saying, you know what, we're going to play McElhinney. I could just see him running Anderson to the ground.
I unfortunately think that's going to happen too. I wish he wouldn't do that, but it's something that wouldn't shock me at all.
He's just so competitive. I just couldn't see him with, like, his whole idea behind him would be, you know what, I'm going my best guy. I'm going who I feel gives the best chance to win, even though, you know, there might be some things I say otherwise. I think he doesn't give a shit. He's just going to roll who he thinks is the best. Die with his guys, per se.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you want to show your faith and trust in him as well. You're not going to want to shelter him and kind of feel like you're trying to do him a favor by not playing him all the time. So, I get that.
Yeah, look at the Leafs D. You know, I mean, there's a lot of issues here. Obviously, like Jake.
I'd prefer not to.
You prefer not to? Okay.
Jake would like to take the fifth. I was just going to say that, you know. Jake would like to take the fifth in this part of the segment.
Okay, exactly. Well, you know, we're going to talk about a new guy that they brought in then, because Alexei Marchenko is kind of interesting in my opinion. He's somebody that can be like a steady third line guy, you know, nothing too fancy. I mean, he's probably done his development, most defensive peak at 25. So he is what he is, but who comes out of the lineup for him to get a chance to draw into the lineup?
Literally anybody not named Zaitsev, Riley, and Gardner.
Yeah. I mean, Carrick has kind of fallen to favor of Babcock as well, but Carrick would have to go through a major slump in order to get. I think he's reserved for a third, as you're saying, a third pairing role. So it could be a case where Polak could be banged up and needs a day off. I mean, we've seen it with Hunwick getting a couple of days off. So yeah, he's fighting between Polak and Hunwick if he wants to play.
I mean, the day he was claimed, everybody was saying that he's instantly the Leafs' fourth best defenseman. That's sad.
I could buy that. But here's the thing. Carrick played a team low 13 minutes tonight among defensemen. You know, Hunwick and Polak both played more than him tonight. We saw this act with Marinson a couple games ago, then he sat the next game. So is that bad news for Carrick, maybe? I mean, Babcock usually doesn't play guys Like, he doesn't stick guys for no reason.
Well, yeah, and he had that dumb penalty. Well, I wouldn't say dumb penalty, but a penalty that he shouldn't have taken in the third period. And I know he said after the game he wasn't happy about it, so that could be part of the reason too. Yeah, Carrick, I think Babcock is trying to keep that Gardner-Carrick pairing together because he wants to keep the chemistry there, but I mean, you can't have Carrick playing. So he played 13 minutes. You can't have
still 19 shifts, but
yeah, we can't have him playing 13 minutes. Like Hunwick played 15, close to 16. Pollock had over 17, and then like Gardner played 20, and he also had to play. Oh, geez, he played 5 minutes on the power play. Like, so I get that. I get that Carrick. I don't know. Carrick hasn't been awful, but he hasn't been. I mean, he hasn't been the worst defenseman on the team. That's for sure.
That's not saying much either, though. I mean, you kind of sound like you're on the fence. He's okay.
He's not a top four. That's for sure. But he's playing in the top four because who else are they going to put?
That's a good point. Let's just put it this way. They don't have a postseason caliber defense.
No. And we found that out.
Stanley Cup caliber offense.
It's pretty damn good right now, the offense. But now that you mentioned the playoffs, why don't we get into that a little bit where, you know, obviously this team is seventh if you go by points percentage in the East. They're on the outside looking in right now. What's going to prevent this team from making the playoffs, guys? Obviously the defense is one major issue, but is there something else? Or is it just strictly the D?
Injuries to Anderson or a defenseman like Gardner, Riley, or Zaitsev.
Outside of the obvious being an injury, it's the defense by far. I mean, they are so bad. I mean, even it's not even just the bottom level guys. Morgan Riley looks really bad right now, and I don't know if he's still hurt or he's just trying to go out there and play for the team, but. You know, I would really appreciate it if he doesn't play, if he's injured, because he's actually been playing kind of as a deficit to the team.
Well, he is still hurt. Yeah. Like, he's been walking around practice with heavy ice and tape.
I mean, O-Dog was saying it today. Once you put on that jersey, you're considered healthy, and I agree.
Yeah, I think there's a big difference between being injured and being hurt. You can play through, you know, being hurt, but if you're injured – take a seat.
Yeah.
Exactly. And he's clearly injured. And don't let him get hurt any more than he is. I mean, I'm not really sure of what his specific injury is. It's his ankle, isn't it?
They said it was like a high ankle sprain or something like that.
Yeah.
Which is, it's a hell of an injury.
It's tough to skate on and turn. He even said, he goes, when I make certain cuts and turn a certain way, I feel it kind of push off the side of my skate. So, you know, he's like, I'll just play through it. That's what he was saying after Skate Around Monday.
There you go, yeah.
Well, health-wise, the Leafs have been extremely fortunate this year. Aside from Ben Smith up front, they've had no injuries, and, of course, Riley on defense. Do you guys see that sustaining? A lot of the rookies, obviously, this is the longest season they've ever played. People love to read into the narrative that, you know, they've never played this many games before. They're either going to slow down, hit a wall, or they're going to get injured. Do you think they're going to stay healthy or hit a wall, either or?
I don't. I mean... they haven't shown that they've been feeling any like bumps or bruises or anything because these guys have done a great job of avoiding contact and just getting roughed up. I mean, Marner and Matthews have been roughed up a little bit the last couple games, but that hasn't slowed them down. I think these guys are. I mean, they're always in great shape, and the veteran players, especially offensively, could help them if they go through a slump. Guys like JVR, Bozak have contributed nicely in those roles. A guy like Soshnikov, who's proven he still has a great shot, has done that as well. So I think that's what will help them, is they do have depth when it comes to scoring. I don't really worry about the rookies. I think they're just the adrenaline and being in close games and important games will just keep them motivated through in this stretch right now.
I don't see it at all either. I mean, they're carrying the team. Like, what rookie wall? I mean, did you see Marner against the Islanders? He was everywhere.
He's been ridiculous. He's seventh among active players to reach the most. I think in 50 games, he's got like the seventh most assists among active players or something like that. I saw the other night. It was pretty crazy.
On the radio today, they were talking about him potentially making Team Canada next season. And I mean, based on his numbers, I can't really fault that belief. He's been incredible. I mean, I don't see them hitting a wall. If they are going to hit a wall, when is it? I mean, they've just been so good that I just can't see it.
I don't buy the wall narrative either. I mean, it's something I've been hearing a lot more of. But what do you guys think about the idea of possibly Babcock leaning more on the rookies instead of saying, you know, they might, let's slow them down, peel back here. Like, let's say deploying maybe Matthews or Marner more together when they needed goals, like the way Chicago does with Toews and Kane. Is that something you might see Babcock doing down the stretch, guys? Or do you think he's just going to let them play on two separate lines the entire time?
I think he wants to play them on two separate lines. I mean, people have asked him, and he says Marner can carry his own line. We've seen it, yeah, when they're desperate for a goal, he will put them together, and they instantly put together dangerous offensive chances, so there's always that possibility. But I think he just doesn't want to isolate them on one line. I think it's easy. The team's whole philosophy is to have four lines that are going to match up against the other team's lines. I mean, looking at Marner's stats, he's only had, I'm just looking here, like, his best month was January. And now going into February, he's kind of carrying that over. I don't see a point of putting it with Matthews unless you're like your team is going through a major offensive slump, which I don't think is going to happen for this team. They seem to do well carrying it offensively, so no, I don't see a point in putting them together. They're better split up, and I think having Nylander on his own line too really helps as well
because he can carry a line as a winger, which is ridiculous.
Yeah,
as Babs was saying. I mean, that's so rare for like a teenager, especially on the wing, to carry a line. But that's what he's been doing, and it's been extremely impressive.
Like the question I have: can Laine and Shifley play away from each other?
I mean,
Laine doesn't play with Shifley, only on the power play.
Does he?
Really?
Who does Laine
play? Really?
Yeah, they broke him up recently.
They probably play both. Yeah,
Shifley and Wheeler, and then Andrew Cope.
Cop,
yeah, my bad.
Well, I thought they played most of the season together. That's why I got.
I would check that.
No, they have played most of the season together. It was just recent.
Okay, but yeah, like that's what I'm saying. Like, has Line A performed better when he's not playing with Shifley, or has he played worse?
I mean, Line A's been a beast on the power play too, right?
Well, that's just another. I mean, so has. Matthews is one of the best. I mean, he's the least best player at even strength. You could say Nylander's probably their best on the power play, and Marner's kind of the in between. But yeah, I think probably a little bit better at even strength. That's probably what makes them more successful is that they're better at even strength than they are on the power play.
You're saying Laine in comparison, or Matthews and Marner in comparison to Laine?
I just think just on their, like, if you look at what Matthews and Marner and whether they can sustain what they're doing. It's because they're playing so well on the at even strength that they don't really rely on the power play to get their numbers to where they are. Like Laine, I think, relies a little bit more on the power play because of his shot. He needs to have the perfect setup for that shot. So that's what I think. That's why this is a little bit of a difference I see between the two rookies there.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, imagine sticking Matthews on a power play with Byfuglien, Shifley, Wheeler, and then you could pick between Trouba. Like, there's a lot of guys they have there that can help contribute. Like,
yeah, sure.
I'm sure Matthews is putting some pretty damn good numbers too. Like, like you guys said earlier, he's doing this.
He's not playing with scrubs himself.
No, I know he's not, but I mean, I think we could all agree those guys are slightly a step up right now. Like the Blake Wheelers and Byfuglien of the world are slightly better. Not significantly, but enough, you know.
Well, yeah,
I think, like, sure. Just imagine Matthews playing with some veteran guys like that.
Yeah, he's carrying a line of rookies with Hyman and Brown, who are not considered, like, on the Shifley level. Although Connor Brown has played with Connor McDavid before and produced, so.
They did pretty well with that guy. I heard he's pretty good.
I heard he's pretty good.
if Matthews keeps up at this pace and how he's playing and at least make the playoffs, do you guys think he'll receive any Hart Trophy votes? The last time the Maple Leafs got any significant award was in 1993 when Gilmore won the Selke and Pat Burns won Coach of the Year. But since then, they haven't really had any awards.
No, and I think maybe – I think Cujo might have gotten some Vezina nods when he was in Toronto, and I'm not sure if – I mean, I'm just looking up. The only guy I could think of that would have been had anything close would have been Matt Sundin, and he got some Hart – I mean, he got some Hart votes when he – in kind of the early stages in being in Toronto. But, yeah, no, I don't – Matthews will definitely get some votes. I just don't think it's going to be enough to put him over the obviously not put him over a guy like Crosby, McDavid, I guess Holtby for Washington. I'm just trying to think who else would be in that conversation for the Hart Trophy. There's just so many.
Burns
for San Jose. Who would you say for? I'm just trying to think of like top teams and.
Well, I'm more curious if you guys think he's even going to get any votes. I think that'd be impressive for a 19-year-old to get votes.
Oh, I think he'll get
votes. He'll probably get some.
He'll definitely get some. Because especially with the writers are... I mean, how many writers have been impressed with how Matthews has played? They'll definitely give him some good consideration there.
Well, a lot of people were saying, too, at the All-Star game, they were surprised and impressed at how much of a quote-unquote celebrity/rock star he is because... Everybody knows of him vaguely, but they're all curious to find out more about him. So I think that just tells you how much hype is around him. He's the number two selling jersey in the NHL this year behind Crosby. That's insane.
Yeah, it is.
Yep. But it's also, I mean, so hard to get a Matthews jersey in Toronto and Marner as well. So that adds to it as well.
Yeah, I mean, you just look around the ACC right now and all you see is number 34. Everywhere.
Or whenever I go to games around the at opposing rinks, I mean, the only names I really see are Matthews and Marner. I mean, you know, I myself would probably pick them too, but it's kind of shocking how you just don't see any other guys. Pretty much, those are the two main guys. I'm actually shocked that Marner's not in that top 10. He might be, but. I'm not really sure. You'd probably know better than me.
I just saw that the top five and Marner wasn't on it. But,
No, he wasn't.
Something you talked about earlier in the season, Jake, was you previewed the Calder Trophy and all that. I mean, we can go over this really quickly because it's just pretty much all Leafs atop the Calder list. But right now, is Matthews not the slight favorite over Laine? And then, you know, you could argue Marner is extremely close. Like, it's kind of a tight race up top with Nylander being the dark horse maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be pretty much 1-2-3 in that order. That's pretty much locked in right now. I know Zach Werenski is a lot of people that are big fans of his, but I think he's just been surpassed. He's kind of slowed down a little bit. So has the entire Columbus Blue Jackets team. But yeah, I think it's going to be that way. I think Mitch Marner's going to have to outscore all of those guys to get votes over like Matthews and Laine. But yeah, for me, it's Matthews to lose pretty much.
Unless Laine goes on a absolute tear.
Unless he scores 45 goals, but I don't see it. Matthews is on pace for 40. Yeah. So.
And he plays center, which I still think people value more than a winger.
Exactly. They do 100%. Although last time we had such a highly debated race. It was between a winger and a center, and the winger won. So Alexander Ovechkin.
Oh, but yeah, he had how many 50? How many goals? Over 50 goals, didn't he? In that,
I believe he had 55 goals, but Crosby himself had 105 points.
Well, I can tell you right now, Ovechkin had.
They both had over 100 points. I think it was pretty much they had the same amount of points.
Okay, so he had 52 in his rookie season, had 106 points. Crosby, I think, had 100, and if I'm not, well, I'll double check, but I'm pretty sure Crosby had...
It's like 113, I think.
No, he had less. He had 102. He knew he had 102? Less. 102?
Jeez.
Even still, man, 102. Like,
well, I wrote, yeah. They were the last two rookies to get 100-point seasons.
Yeah, it's that's an incredible number. I mean, we'll see. Hope maybe it comes down in the future, but or the points per game go up. Sorry, but
no, I don't think I don't. Oh, I
don't know, man.
I don't know.
Well, the, maybe you never know with the way you know pant sizes and all that stuff. But yeah, that's that's pretty incredible. 100 points for considering we might not even have a guy hit 100 points this season.
Right. Well, Mick Jesus or Crosby might take care of that. But I love how the pants has became like a hot topic recently, the goalie pants.
Yeah.
Poor goalies. Like, I don't think the pants are what's keeping the pucks from going in the net.
It's, no, I think it's the size of the goalies.
Size of the goalies and the glove. Like, the actual, like, glove, if you look at it, is ridiculous how big it is. I don't know how they catch pucks with that.
I mean, guys are humongous now. That also adds in.
Mm-hmm. They're as big as the Nets.
They're huge.
Okay, before we get out of here, this guy's an asshat, but Gary Lawless, you know, did his little trade thing about how the Leafs should go and trade Nylander for Brandon Montour or Manson or one of the Ducks defensemen.
Basically, I mean, what everybody's been saying, including myself, for the last, what, 2-3 months?
Yeah, I mean, he's just scorching hot takes of shit all the time. That the Jets have a brighter future. Just plays into his market. He actually nauseates me. I get what he's trying to do, you know, where he is and the market he's trying to feed to, but come on, man. All of my BS aside and my distaste for him, would you guys do Nylander for any of these Anaheim Duck defensemen?
No, unless they're getting more than one of them.
Yeah,
like if they did a 2-for-1 package, sure, but they're not going to do that, and
especially because they're in a bind. I mean, they can't keep all of them.
Nope, they can't. So they can't.
Keep I'd be like, you can lose them or you can get something from me. It's your choice.
Like if you actually look at like how like screwed they are when it comes to the expansion draft. Like I think they're banking on keeping some of these younger defensemen because they're going to lose someone when it comes.
Yeah.
Like, they have to protect Bieksa unless he waives his no movement clause and gets traded. And like they can only, I mean, they have to keep Perry, Getzlaf, Kessler.
They got to decide between Vatanen, Fowler, Lindholm.
Josh Manson, they like. Let's see. They have Simone
Dupre. You haven't even said Shea Theodore yet.
Well, Shea Theodore is protected, so they're lucky.
I don't know about that, man.
I don't think Montour is either.
I'm looking at it right now on Cap Friendly. So Shea Theodore, all three, the big, well, I'll call them the big three, are all protected. But they're also RFAs at the end of next season. So they need new contracts. I mean, Montour just scored this past weekend because he's playing.
Yeah, he looked good again tonight, too.
He played. Yeah, he's playing for Vatanen because Vatanen's injured right now. So
he's an awesome skater, too, man, Montour. That guy's been tearing up the AHL for the past year and a half.
Like,
I know. I just don't understand how you can have a guy just sitting, rotting away in your AHL team when he doesn't belong there and you're not the greatest team in the league right now. It doesn't make sense to me.
Right.
Their offense. They don't have an offense.
A lot of guys have taken a downward spiral for them, right? I mean, Corey Perry's production has just fallen off a cliff with Carlisle there. Their first line has now became the Silverberg-Kessler line as opposed to the Getzlaf-Perry. They're kind of in transition, right? In that sense, I guess.
Yeah, I was actually really shocked at how good a year Kessler's been having. I mean, that was pretty shocking to me, to be honest.
Him and Silverberg have been lights out, dude.
Yeah, I remember I was talking and I'm like, they're saying, yeah, Kessler's got like 45 points or something. I'm like, no way. I looked up and he somehow has 45 points.
Right? He hasn't looked as good like since he's had hip surgeries.
Yeah, he looks quite good.
Okay, so what would you guys give up for one of these defensemen then? I know you both said, you know, you kind of take the patient approach and just wait until they are forced to make a deal, but what would you give up if you had to?
I would pick some prospects.
Yeah, forward prospects. That's what the Leafs have an abundance of, and that's what Anaheim needs. And guys they wouldn't have to protect in the expansion draft. Like, people, this is going to be the biggest factor, is the expansion draft. the Leafs have forwards that they don't have to protect.
They don't have to, the Leafs don't have to protect anyone, basically.
Well, like, yeah, they don't have anyone to protect. I think if I'm the Leafs, JVR is the guy I would look at to move for one of those defensemen. If, like, if the deal was right, that's the guy. Just because I don't know what his contract's going to be like when his is up.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know what he's going to get. Like, if the cap goes up more, I mean, he'll probably get anywhere from what? $6 to maybe $8 million. I know eight's extremely high, but if the cap increases, that's going to go with it.
If he goes to UFA, he could get between $7-$7.5 million, and that's on the low end. Like that's like what his market value should probably be as a UFA. But somebody
he's getting paid. That's the thing I think we can all agree on.
He's taken a big he's taken a good discount because he got that good deal. Well. At the time, it wasn't working out for the Flyers, but it worked out graciously for the Leafs.
So. Yeah, that's something that I was joking around with my dad about on how they can get a defenseman. They basically have to do that JVR trade, but the opposite.
They
have to rip off some team and get a defenseman. They got to do that deal. It would be hard to find a team that would be willing to. To deal from a position of strength on defense for a forward and get kind of ripped off, but you never know. There's a lot of stupid GMs out there.
The other thing is Anaheim can afford to give up one of these defensemen because they have so many, and then they could just go ahead and draft someone since they seem to know how to draft defensemen well enough. They can just replace the guy that they've given up.
I mean, the guy that's not even being talked about is like Jacob Larsson, who's in their prospect pool. He's another guy that's going to be a top six defenseman in the NHL.
Yeah.
I mean, they just, it's like a factory. They can just find them. They might have 10 guys that are capable of being NHL defensemen in a top six.
It's, yeah. And
it isn't.
Yeah.
I was just going to say it's impressive.
It's yeah,
impressive. Way to frame it, I mean.
It's impressive because, I mean, everybody wondered how were the Anaheim Ducks such a great defensive team under Bruce Boudreaux, who's not known as a defensive coach? And you look at who they have, and then their goaltending is really good. But their offense, I mean...
That's the thing where, you know, it's like kind of a genius thing, but kind of not. How do you have this many assets, and you haven't parlayed it into anything for your offense, and you have an aging core of players? Well, that's the thing that doesn't make sense to me.
I'm scared to be aggressive.
I just don't know why. You should be all in right now if you're them, because you're looking around. You're probably not going to beat Minnesota. You're definitely not beating Pittsburgh or Washington in the finals.
You probably won't beat Chicago or San Jose.
No, probably not. So I think they're probably the fifth best team in their conference right now.
Unless they make a move that will shoot them up.
Drastically improve that.
Yeah. Well, they're the same spot as like St. Louis, man. They're like,
a good deal for them would be if they could get a guy like maybe a Landeskog or a Duchesne for one of those defensemen, because they'd basically be giving up nothing, and you give up a first, one of those defensemen, and you could get Duchesne, who's a top six player, and he's got a lot of years left on his deal.
I love how we just turned this into an Anaheim Ducks podcast. Just talk about how to make them better, and like the Leafs fans are just like, okay.
Hey, how to make them better so then they can make us better.
This is Gary Lawless's fault, by the way.
It always is.
Wait till the summer, though. The rumors are going to be scorching hot. The takes are going to be unreal this offseason.
Oh.
The expansion draft and everything. Like,
I'm actually really excited to see how it's going to even work out.
Me too.
I'm trying to think, because the Leafs are obviously going to go out and get a defenseman, but I have no idea who it could be or what they could give up. I guess a question for you would be, if you had to get a defenseman, say Brandon Montour, you get a call from the Ducks and they say to you guys, they say, hey, Dave, hey, Chris, we have Brandon Montour. Give us your best deal. What would you offer for a defenseman like that? Individually, what would each of you offer? Because I have an idea what I would offer.
We're talking in the off season?
Yes.
All right, I'll let you go first, Chris.
I'm thinking.
I haven't.
Ideally, if you're Anaheim, you'd probably want JVR because, you know, RFA contract, which they could bridge over. But if they're all in, which they should be for the following season, JVR makes sense. But if on the Leafs, I'd be kind of hesitant to part ways with him, knowing you could get more for him later. I'd probably offer them like a prospect and draft picks, like maybe like a second round pick and a low end prospect or a mid tier prospect.
If I'm the Leafs, I'm seeing where Kirby Reichel fits and what he's been playing a lot better for the Marlies. So I would try to say him, and you would add a pick to kind of sweeten the pot. Because Kirby Reichel has played much better for the Marlies, especially when Kapanen went down.
He's been on a tear.
And he's the type of guy that Randy Carlyle would love to have. A tough guy. I think if you give him the opportunity in the NHL, I think he would do well. He has the size. He's got the offensive ability. I just think he hasn't had the chance to show it. So like I would say Reichel as the prospect, and you would have to add a pick, like a second round pick, which at least have an abundance of. You can even go with two mid tier, like a Reichel and another prospect, and then like make the pick lower. I think Anaheim would prefer to go with a more skilled offensive guy than a bruiser, but I think Reichel could be the good in-betweener for them.
And what pick did you say?
Well, it depends. If I'm dealing Reichel, then I would add a second. If they want more than Reichel, so like another prospect, then I would do a lower pick, like a third or a fourth pick.
Interesting. I think what I would offer is a guy like a Nikita Kurotsalev or like a Dirkles, maybe two of those guys and one of the three second round picks that the Leafs have.
So you're going way down in there. I don't know if Anaheim is going to want a guy that's
the guys who I were thinking of that I don't know how interested they'd be in would be like guys like Andreas Janssen or Dmytro Timoshov. I would be hesitant to offer a guy like Kasperi Kapanen or Jeremy Bracco, that might be what they ask for. Another guy who the Leafs have that's another sleeper that they pulled out of the trash bin is Adam Brooks. They were talking about this on Leafs Lunch and how Adam Brooks is looking. Yeah, and he was an overager, and he looks like he's going to be a real contributor at the NHL level. He looks like a guy that can definitely score in the NHL someday. I don't know if I would be inclined to give up a guy with as high as upside as those guys, like Brooks, Kapanen, and Bracco, but you know, at that point, you know, you might just have to bite the bullet and trade one of those guys to get the defenseman that fits your need. I would actually be willing to overpay for him.
Here's where I'm curious is because you look at last year when Seth Jones for Johansson, then you had Larson for Taylor Hall. Like, obviously, that's the market at the NHL level. But what would an AHL top prospect about to enter the NHL, like a Montour, like, what's his value? Like, I don't know. Because we've seen the value of defensemen skyrocket. So is it the same thing when it comes to training prospects?
I think it would be different because it's not an established player. It would obviously be less. I mean, you're not doing Taylor Hall for Larson. I mean, that's just ridiculous.
But somebody would do that, and they've already done it.
Well, yeah, dumb teams, desperate teams would do that, but sane teams wouldn't do that.
Sane teams. Are you sure they're still sane
same
teams?
GM.
He's the guy that traded Tyler Seguin, and I really don't think they have one asset from that deal still on the team.
Hey, Louis Erickson wasn't bad for a little bit. That gave him a straight face.
Oh, man, Boston. Oh, Boston.
How those Dougie Hamilton picks work?
Yeah, exactly. They blew three straight first-round picks. Maybe that's why they're firing a coach that's a Jack Adams winger and a Stanley Cup champion when they're garbage.
Not bad for a pair of Harvard grads.
Yeah, yeah. Just goes to show maybe you need to get out and do something outside of looking at a book all day.
What money can buy? What money can buy?
Maybe watch a hockey game and so you can tell who's good and who's not.
Maybe head to the bean pot.
Yeah, maybe do that. It's only in your building.
Only four good teams.
Yeah.
On that note, guys, I'd say we've covered most of the stuff with this. You know, we're deviating way off topic here.
Thanks,
as
Jake.
Always. Go ahead.
Oh, Jake. No, I'm just saying thanks to Jake for deviating us off topic. Like usually.
No, I think it was a good conversation, man. I mean,
oh, definitely. You know. I don't mind having a nice little chat. I'm Italian. Us Italians like to talk.
Hey, I love talking about anything to do with NHL in terms of like the league and how we can just kind of spin it back to the Leafs after. It makes it fun.
Definitely does. But,
as always, I'd like to thank everybody for listening to this week's episode of the Toronto Maple Leafs podcast on Tip of the Tower. You can always subscribe to the show on iTunes or SoundCloud at Tip of the Tower. You can also like our Facebook page at Tip of the Tower. You can subscribe or you can follow us on Twitter at Tip of the Tower. Pretty much anything, anywhere, social media, at Tip of the Tower. I'm sure you've heard me say it enough now, at Tip of the Tower. If you want to follow me on Twitter, you can follow me at Chris O'Kranitz. You can follow Dave at D_Morisuti. You can follow Jake at JakeMilton12. Thanks for listening, guys, and enjoy the Leafs game this week.
William Nylander.
The Knights, Mitch Marner.